Hello, everybody.
Love Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Julie Cayley, real estate broker and real estate investor. And I really appreciate everybody tuning in today to our podcast. It's been a little while since I did a podcast, and today I decided to do something a little bit different. It is kind of the week between Christmas and New Year's, and, you know, a new year is coming up, and we're all working on our goals and thinking about what we want to accomplish next year and looking back about what we did accomplish this year. And I thought it would be a really good time to do a podcast on real estate investing, specifically on what a friend of mine likes to call mailbox money. And that is kind of the buy and hold strategy of real estate investing. So that is what we're going to talk about today. And for those of you who are first time listening to me, I just wanted to say thank you and just give you a little bit of background about myself. Again, my name is Julie Cayley. I am a real estate broker. My license is 01412616, and I am active in the state of California. I have a small real estate brokerage in Merced called Merced Homes Realty, and a real estate brokerage office here in Modesto as well called Assist to Sell Central Valley Realty. Long before I started selling real estate, which actually I got licensed in 2003, so I'm coming up on 15, 16 years of selling real estate, and most of that time being a broker and running my own offices, I was what you call a landlord by default, meaning I had a home and then I had to move and the market wasn't so great, so I rented it out and then I did it again and again. And then I just sort of became a landlord by default, as I like to say, and then I got really interested in the idea of investing. So it's not something that I talk about a lot with my audience, but it is something that I am really passionate about and believe really strongly in for building financial freedom and long-term wealth and assets and an estate and those sorts of things. So I do a little bit of everything. My primary business is brokering real estate transactions. I've also flipped a couple of properties. I am a buy and hold investor. I have single family, duplex, condos, and some vacation rental cabins as well. So I have a little bit of everything on that regard. I also complete broker price opinions for me, and I sold a lot of REOs and foreclosures and HUD homes back when the market was a foreclosure market. So that's a little bit about me and my background and, you know, why I'm kind of uniquely qualified to even be doing this podcast. So I just want to remind everybody that there are lots of ways to make money in this real estate business. And today we're specifically going to talk about buy and hold real estate investing. So I'm going to join in with a friend of mine to have us have him join me on the call here. So let me see if I can get him on our call. Hang on one second, everybody. Hold on one second here. He was supposed to call in to our podcast number. Okay, just bear with me. Let me try that one more time. One second, guys. Sorry about that. This is my first time of doing two people on the podcast. Okay, everybody. So I'm back, and I've got an acquaintance of mine. His name is Jim Sperano, and he is a local real estate investor as well. And he was also a real estate agent and is now a broker as well. So he has a lot of experience and a lot of the same things that I just mentioned to you that I have done. So welcome, Jim.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for having me.
Yes. It's so good to hear from you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you. So what we were talking about, Jim, and I was just sharing with the audience, is that there's lots of different ways to make money in real estate and in real estate investing. And what we really wanted to focus on today is what we called Buy and Hold Real Estate, and we hope that it leads to mailbox money for us. And that's kind of a concept that you and I had talked about in the past, mailbox money. So why don't you just tell us what that means, mailbox money?
Well, mailbox money to me is when you open that mailbox, you have checks, ideally rent checks. Starting small, you could easily have, you know, $100, $1,000, $10,000 a month in your mailbox from rent checks. And that could also be, that's not just rent, but rent is probably a great first step for any real estate investor.
Yes. Okay, great. And how did you get interested or started in real estate investing, Jim? What got you interested in it? I was sharing with the audience that I sort of became what I like to call a landlord by default, right? Like I had a home, and my husband had a home, and then he got job transferred, and the market was kind of crappy, so we both rented out our houses and moved, and that kind of got us started in, you know, becoming landlords by default. And then, you know, we liked getting that mailbox money every month, and we decided to look at that as, you know, a strategy of investing on purpose. You know, we've kind of built our, you know, our portfolio over the last 10 or 15 years from that. But that's kind of how I got started. And how did you get started?
You know, after I graduated from Cal State Hayward, I just pawned an opportunity with a friend of mine who was actually a real estate agent to go to an auction in the Bay Area. He recommended, hey, maybe myself and actually my mom at the time, my mom get qualified to potentially buy. I think we were, you know, it was really, the price ranges were significantly less than they are today. We were looking at properties really at, you know, like $100,000, pretty fairly inexpensive for the Bay Area.
Oh, wow. That is really inexpensive for the Bay Area. It's probably gone up 8 to 10-fold since that time, right?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, we had no intention to buy anything. and it was, we bid on a condo. It was like a 3-bedroom condo in Union City.
Mm-hmm.
We won. We got this condo for $100,000, and my friend, the it was a realtor. He said, "I think we can just turn this thing." He says, "I think we can just close escrow and turn this thing," and we did. And we turned around and sold it for $130,000, and really didn't do anything.
So
and
essentially, you flipped it. You got it at an auction, and then you just. You almost got it as like a wholesale deal, and then you just put it right back on the market and sold.
Not knowing anything, knowing anything.
Okay, so it was your lucky day then, and you thought this is great. This is the best thing ever, right?
yeah. And as everybody would know, that's just not that simple. We went ahead and turned that money into a fourplex that we bought in Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm.
That thing went through a pretty substantial renovation, and we turned around and began renting that thing and started seeing the mailbox money. I think we bought that property for, it was something like $170,000, and I think we put some money into that for the renovation, but the rents at the time were something like $2,800 gross a month when we first started. And it was, I think we were like $1,200, $1,300 positive a month on that property. And that really, you know, that condo to the fourplex really started my investing. It opened my eyes to mailbox money.
So you used the money from a flip essentially to go into the buy and hold strategy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, that's something that a lot of investors have done. They might not have the 20% down required for a financing of a non-owner OC down payment, but that's one way to get to it, is to flip a property and kind of have a large amount of income come to you in a a short amount of time and then just turn that into the buy and hold. And you'll hear that from a lot of experienced flippers. They flip to get the money to invest into the good buy and hold properties. So that is definitely a strategy that I've heard a lot of investors utilize. So that's interesting that it just sort of came your way. And both you and I really weren't looking to get into the real estate investing game, and it just sort of happened, and that path was put in front of us. That's wonderful. So then that sort of started your journey of what it was like. Now, you mentioned that you thought you paid about $170 for that and then put some money into rehabbing and rented it for $2,800. So that would far exceed what we call the 1% rule. I mean, that's almost like a 2% rule, which is pretty much unheard of anymore, especially here in California. And so can you share with everybody what that 1% rule is? Because I really think that is a rule of thumb that I personally have stuck to over these last 15 years, and sometimes it's just a smidge below, or sometimes I get lucky and it's a smidge over, but I do know that if I can stay around that 1%, that it always worked out to be a good deal for me, and I feel like I'm kind of protected from going wrong. You know, I'm fudging in a little bit of things breaking or, you know, having an eviction or whatever with that 1% rule, because there's enough there. So what is that 1% rule? Can you explain that to the audience?
Well, first off, I know there's several ways to calculate that 1% rule, but I honestly use a very simple method myself and just call it rent multiplied by 100, rent times 100.
Okay.
Taking the gross rent of the property that you're looking at, you know, like the fourplex, if you just simply use $500, you know, four units, $2,000, 2,000 times 100, what's that, $200,000.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you would not want to exceed $200,000 on your purchase price.
Yep.
So you see the way that quickly weeds out a lot of property.
Mm-hmm. It does.
I mean, the rents are very high in the area. I mean, that same fourplex, that area, even though it's, in my opinion, a lower end of Oakland, I mean, you're seeing rents upwards of $4,000, $5,000 total for the product, maybe even higher in some of the neighboring areas. So you can see the value is astronomical. But
what you're saying, the way that you calculate it is exactly the way that I calculate it as well. I just run the number backwards when I look at something. So I say, okay, this house is for sale for, you know, $150,000, it should bring in $1,500 a month rent. If it doesn't bring in $1,500 a month rent, and let's say it brings in $1,300 a month rent, then I want to pay $130 for it, you know, or as close as I can to it, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, and so that's what I was talking about, and it sounds like you're on that same wavelength as well. And I really think, like, that is a good rule of thumb for most people to stick to out there. And sometimes I hear people say, oh, but, you know, there's going to be appreciation, and, you know, and there may be or there may not be. You know, that's kind of all speculation.
Yes. Well, over my investing career, Julie, I simply looked at cash flow, and I always thought of appreciation as just the bonus.
I
felt when you started looking at purchasing for appreciation, unfortunately, the market can turn on you. Your rent usually stays the same or increases, but the value, you know, could swing wildly up or down and put you into a bad spot.
Yeah. Right. And if you bought that property correctly around that 1% rule, you're not going to really care if it goes up a little bit or goes down a little bit, because you're managing for the cash flow and you're positive on it. So you can essentially ride out any down periods because you have good cash flow on it. And, you know, if appreciation comes, then, like you said, that's a bonus. And so let's kind of talk about that as far as if appreciation comes. I've seen people handle that in a couple of different ways as well. Like, I've seen people really subscribe to that theory of, okay, if appreciation comes and I want to refi out and go buy another property, or
yes.
I want to sell it in 1030 exchange into a larger property. What kind of your thoughts on that?
I think that's the way the majority of individuals look at investing, at least from the small investor standpoint. And I mean, I think at most of the time that will work out for people. But what I've realized over my time investing is that if the market swings down, you can get in a really bad spot that you may not be able to get out of. And that's really the whole problem that every investor will face if you get caught in that downturn.
So those are the risks. The risks.
That's the risk. The risk is losing. It's a big loss.
Yeah, which we saw happen to a lot of people in 2008 through basically 2012. I mean, a good 5-year span there of people losing properties, and that was homeowners, investors, you know, and all kinds of stuff, you know, went into default because they were over leveraged and upside down on the properties and underwater or whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, rents were kind of funky in that time period. So there's just a lot of economic uncertainty, people getting laid off, so tenants couldn't pay the rent. And, you know, it was just a kind of like a perfect storm. If your payment was low and you weren't over leveraged, you have a better, you know, a better chance of riding out that storm as well. So I think that is important for, you know, for people to point out. I will say during that downturn, that's the only time that I've ever had an eviction in the 15 to 20 years that I've had rental properties. I think it was in 2010. And I actually had two tenants simultaneously that I had to evict. And they both were situations where they had both lost their jobs.
Yes.
And you know, it was painful. It was a learning process. It cost me a couple months' rent on both, you know, in both situations. But, you know, the process runs its course, and I got other people right back in there, and I've never had a problem getting any one of my homes or units or condos rented. Never. I've never had vacancy for more than maybe the 30 days when I'm turning it over. I mean, finding the right tenant. I think in our area here in the Central Valley and California and Northern California, probably all of California, the demand for housing is so high. It's so high that I just feel like if you've got a decent property, you're going to get it rented. Do you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. But I think that the good luck and the bad luck with renting is really just part of the business. I don't think anybody is going to experience 100% positive or negative. You know, I think realistically it's about buying a property that has the potential for the cash flow and looking, having a plan with your property that fits the end investing result that you're looking for. I mean, for most, I would suspect it's not just a quick flip. If we're looking for mailbox money, we're looking for, well, if I'm going to obtain a fourplex, I hope this thing is going to make $4,000 a month, $8,000 a month, and I'm going to at some point possibly just have it paid off, and it's going to just give me that $4,000 or $8,000, and I'm comparing that to my monthly salary at my my job, and I see that, you know, at if I put my time in on this property for 20 years, I could simply retire from this property. It may
just
be way faster. Yeah, I mean, just one property. And you, if you really look at it at a really long-term plan, just like you would look at your job, you could see that a small investment in a fourplex could really change your life. And it's something. It's really something to analyze instead of a short term, even if you had the problems and you had to have 4 quick evictions, which is awful, very challenging.
Right. But you get through it. You get through the process
right.
and the hardship and, you know, the legal finagling and,
yes.
you know, all of that. And then you get it rented right back out and start collecting
right.
the money again. That was my experience as well, you know.
That's
and,
right.
And luckily, I haven't had another, you know, eviction, and that was about 10 years ago. So yeah, I mean, I think it's inevitable to happen to everybody at some time, you know, and it is just part of the risk. And before you joined me on the call, that was one of the things that I was letting the audience know about was, you know, part of the reason why we do this buy and hold is hopefully to obtain that financial freedom or that financial independence. Exactly what you said regarding, you know, quitting your job and having that money come in anyways, and you're just going to the mailbox and collecting that check and not having to get up and go to work because you put the time into that property. And, I mean, what better pension or retirement can there be out there than having that? And then guess what? If you wanted to sell it, you'll get paid in real money for it, too, you know, or if you wanted to refinance it or if you wanted to just pay it off and collect the money. I mean, those are all options that are there, and you still have that asset as well. And yes, it's going to require maintenance, and you know there'll be a repair here and there, and moving tenants in and out. But it should be a consistent source of income that should ride right along with inflation as well. You know, with the rent rising and all of that. So I think that's really, you know, really solid advice. Do you have any other just sort of quick tips or rules of thumb that you subscribe to? I know we talked about the 1% rule. Anything that you want to add regarding managing tenants or how do you find these properties? Tell us where you would find a property like that someone might want to invest in.
Well, realtors.
Realtors, okay.
I think most folks today, they have to do their research utilizing realtors. So they can use the 1% rule and realtors and start looking at values of the properties and rents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they need to understand those things, because if you don't understand the values out there and the rents, you're not going to make a wise choice on your purchase for your investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are some websites, you know, like called Rentometer that you could put an address in and it would tell you what about the market should rent for. You can go on sites like Zillow or Craigslist. Just watch Craigslist a little bit. So you can look for similar homes to rent and see what they're renting for. You can look at property management websites to get an idea of what something might be renting for. And I've given that advice to, you know, to people who call in and say, oh, what do you think that would rent for? So those are all free resources. And then if you wanted to work with a realtor, I mean, it's as simple as calling up a realtor or emailing a realtor and just saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for a fourplex or a multifamily. Can you just put me on the list to automatically send properties to me? And then the realtor can go into their MLS, set that up, and forget about it. And then you can just contact the realtor if you see a property you're interested in. It's very passive for the agent to do that. It's not a lot of work up, and you can monitor the market, you know, and it might take you a year or two before you're ready to purchase. It might take you 3 months, you know, I don't really know, but at least you can get on that list and start looking at properties and analyzing them and checking what the rents are and, you know, getting familiar with what's going on, you know, in that local market. And there's properties everywhere for sale, you know, and I've got most of my properties off of the MLS. I mean, I've bought a couple on auction websites, but I think they were also on the MLS. So only two properties that I've purchased have been like what we call off-market deals, and one I flipped and the other I rented out.
I think that
most of the MLS, though.
As you're expressing, I think that if an investor seasoned or brand new were to speak with a broker, an agent, like yourself, and get that insight. I mean, if you start talking to agents and you find one that has the information that you do, that's what you're looking for to get the information. You can do all the research that you need because there's so much to be found on the internet. But really, when it comes down to placing offers and negotiating, you're going to need a realtor to get it done. And that's where having some communication and being able to have some access to MLS to see what properties are selling for and have sold for and are pending for and what's active out there. I think the only way you're going to find that is through a realtor, but you have to do your own research and be very knowledgeable of what's going on and then communicate with a realtor, find somebody that is knowledgeable of the area, preferably that has knowledge in rental properties, not just selling a house and being done with it. They've had some knowledge with rental properties, and you go from there. Sometimes you can find a realtor by going to, say, LoopNet and looking on for commercial realtors, which seems kind of odd, but commercial realtors a lot of times have a lot of knowledge for apartment rental versus, you know, regular residential realtors in that sense. I mean, so I think it's just important to start speaking with realtors and see if you could find somebody that you can have decent conversations with. Not to mention, you may want to start the qualifying process. I mean, you may pay cash, of course, but not everybody is. Some are going to sit there and finance these things, and they need to be knowledgeable. A realtor, either commercial or residential, can take you to a lender and get that process started.
Right. And I will tell you, you know, there are realtors out there that are much more investor friendly than others. So I think that's a very valid point. that you have to do a little bit of vetting with a realtor for that. You know, and it's not a good or bad or a knock on anybody. It's just some people have that expertise and others don't, you know, just like a realtor might have staging expertise and another might not, you know, it's kind of the same thing, but it is, you know, a specific set of skills. So I think it's definitely worth, you know, exploring that. And then I think the same can be said for a lender as well, because you'll quickly find out once you start buying multiple properties that there's all these rules, lending rules in place for investors. So you really need a investor-friendly lender as well who knows who to broker those loans out to and, you know, those sorts of things. So I think those are all really excellent tips, Jim, of where we can find the properties and finding the investor and investor-friendly realtors and lenders and the 1% rule. And I think that that's a good foundation for people.
That's a lot of information.
It's a lot of information, Julie.
Yes, it's a lot of information. And I mean, anybody listening that thinks, hey, that's very overwhelming. Well, start at step one. You know, you have to talk to people. You have to and just look on the internet for properties and start getting a feel for what you're looking for utilizing the 1% rule.
Yes. Perfect.
Yes.
And I'll that is a great way to summarize it. And I'll leave it with one parting thought, and then I'll let you leave it with one parting thought. So if you're new to this or wanting or aspiring to be an investor on buy and hold, I'll recommend a classic book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You can pick up a copy at your library, a used copy at a yard sale. I mean, it's literally all over the place. Or pick up the audiobook and listen to it as you drive around. And really read that a couple of times, and you'll really start to understand what Jim was saying in regards to, you know, sometimes you start with $50 positive income on a property or $100 positive income, and then you just sort of build from there. So it's a great foundational book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a great book to start out your investing career. But learning the 1% rule and understanding that math, taking out your calculator, adding up, if you're looking at a fourplex, four rental units in that building, which is a residential purchase, understanding, well, if this thing is supposed to rent for $4,000, if it's renting for $4,000, it's worth $400,000. If it's only renting for $1,000, it's worth $100,000. $100,000 doesn't turn into $400,000. Add it up. Use your calculator and trust what you're looking at. And if you don't understand it, keep working at it until you start figuring it out. And then you could make the move to purchase.
Yes. Perfect. Okay, perfect. So thanks again, Jim, for chiming in with this information, and I hope everybody found it really informational. And Jim and I are going to continue our series of Mailbox Money, and our goal is to get you to the point where you can purchase your first investment property. So I hope you found this first, you know, call number one, summary call, podcast call number one, or whatever you want to call it, informational. And Jim and I will get back to you here in the short future. And if you have any questions at all about real estate, feel free to email me, juliekaley@yahoo.com. That's juliekaley@yahoo.com. And if you have a question for Jim, you can email me as well, and I can put you in touch with him as well. So thanks a lot, Jim, and Happy New Year to you.
Thanks, Julie. Happy New Year, and good luck, everybody.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.